Predictive programming. We're back from holiday break. Are you a Christmas guy?
I am a Christmas guy.
You're a Christmas guy, me too. It's good to see you again.
You too.
Good to have you back in the mix. How was your, I mean, holidays are kind of a big season. You got college football playoffs, NFL playoffs haven't kicked you off yet, but a lot of standalone games. How was your break? How did you predict?
I enjoyed it very much. Novik Enjoyer on Kalshi, that's obviously myself. We were down in the dumps, you know, minus 700 at our peak.
But minus $700 on Kalshi?
Times 1,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But we're up $1.5 million now. So we've had a little bit of an upswing.
If the Ravens could have won last night, where would you be at?
1.1.
Okay. It's devastating.
A little bit of a swing there. But, you know, fortunately, I do understand how variance works. And when you're trading hundreds of thousands a game, that's what happens. It was fun to see people clowning on that. I enjoyed it very much, but we covered. We're good. Our predicting is on point now.
How about parlays? How are they doing?
We tried to book some parlays, and they're getting us, man. The parlays, they have the script.
The people know. People really know what they're doing. And we got Calcutta's coming up. We got playoff Calcutta's.
Yeah, excited for that one.
We're going to do one of those this week. I still don't totally understand that format, but I'm emceeing it, so I'll have it figured out by.
It's not that hard. It's literally just like you give a name, like this team name, and then
I'm just gonna assume everybody is following the rules. So if I just nod along, nothing is going on. Okay, so today there's a bunch of mishmash stuff that's happened over the last month, and I think we do have some guests that we want to talk to this month, but we thought, as a kind of jumping off point for discussing various topics, we would turn to one of the elite commentators on the prediction market landscape, our close personal friend, Dustin Gaukur, who, if you've never read his tweets, is just a completely locked in hater on all things, particularly Kalshi.
Yes.
But prediction markets in general.
Well, no, that's, we'll get into that.
Well, yeah, it's not clear.
I find his tweets very funny. I think he's hilarious. He makes me laugh when I read his tweets, but he is a legendary hater. And
he's very consistent. I think, like a lot, he's a big shots on goal guy. It's a lot of tweets, a lot of them not doing much engagement. And then when he hits huge.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about. I don't know what his real job is. He writes newsletters and such. I'd be shocked if somebody wasn't cutting him checks who works at a sports book, but I don't know. Yeah. So I don't want to, I don't know the man's business. But Dustin, we love you. Come on the show. Let's have Dustin.
That would be great. If we could get Dustin on, that would be amazing.
Okay. I might regret it halfway through.
So
we got Dustin.
This is my first tweet we have. We'll post up on the screen here. The thing is hilarious. I don't know much, but I do know DraftKings and Jason Robbins were built for prediction markets. I'd imagine they're stoked to compete here, which I found hilarious.
This is in the category of bad Dustin tweets.
Yes. This is,
which I would say is a minority, but this is like insane.
I just love this tweet so much because it's in November, and this is like off of like months and months of hating on prediction markets. Prediction markets are stupid. I hate prediction markets. Kalshi's a fraud. Prediction markets sucks. And then he tweets this, just trying to suck Jason Robbins off so hard. I mean, it's incredible. It's like your bias clearly showing here. Like, you like DraftKings more than Kalshi and Polymarket, that's fine, but let's have some journalistic integrity here. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, we talked about when we had Domer on that the first time I interacted with Domer was him telling me I was dumb for having a similar take. Because I didn't say the same thing, but I said DraftKings delivers products that the PMs are not delivering right now, by which I meant like breadth of market, uptime, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of which is enabled by, you know, the ability to limit customers and the clarity of knowing your counterparty and being an exclusive dealer and whatnot. But so I think there's like, there's a little bit of truth to this that like DraftKings.
Hang on a second. Because have you looked at DraftKings Predicts that came out? I downloaded it.
Yeah.
So it's slop and it's horrible.
I hate to like, it's always a bad look to take a shot at a competitor because it looks like you're, you know,
But DraftKings Predict is a really bad product. Kalshi and Polymarket are good. Like, they're actually very good products. Like,
With flaws that we're discussing.
But sure, but like,
if that's all you ever talked about, you'd clearly be a hater.
If you say Kalshi is a standard or Polymarket is a standard, and you rate them, you know, a 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10, DK Predicts is like a 1 out of 10 or 0. I mean, it was abysmal.
It might have been Dustin who floated this theory that DK Predicts is so bad in part to like
try and destroy
prediction markets on the whole. Like, if it's somebody's first prediction market, they would look at it and say, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And conclude that Kalshi and Polymarket are just as bad.
Not an unreasonable theory.
But it seems insane for them to put it out in the form it did.
It looks like Jason Robbins like, make a prediction market so we can compete with Kalshi and Polymarket. You have 1 week to do it. And they just like whip something up real quick and did it.
I don't know why they would put it out in that form. Another thought about DraftKings and FanDuel prediction markets. So I'm actually, let's get in the weeds. So this, we're going to use our Dustin jumping off point and actually get into some real detail here. DraftKings has a DCM license by virtue of the acquisition of Railbird. So DraftKings has a exchange license, a DCM license, by virtue of the fact that they acquired Railbird. What that means is they can operate their own exchange, like where there's an order book, a central limit order book, and things are crossing, and create markets. That is not the current DraftKings Predicts product. DraftKings Predicts right now is just a broker that gets you into the CME exchange product, which is the Chicago whatever. Yep. It's an existing exchange that has prediction contracts on it. So DraftKings has a license to build their own exchange, but are currently just offering a like skin onto the CME exchange. FanDuel has only gotten a license to be a broker into CME. So thus far, they've signaled that is the only form of prediction market product they are interested in building, which could speak to humility on their end about their ability to deliver this, or simply it could be whatever. They could be in the process of applying for a DCM for all we know. The CME does not have an open API like Kalshi or Polymarket.
I know you're very upset about
that. They have no intent, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody has flagged the fact that like it is virtually impossible to market make on the CME as a regular person. It is an incredibly difficult application process. I think it's very expensive. I'm just starting to dig into it. So for those products to win would be a huge loss for basically everybody we've ever had on as a guest. Like anybody who's in that intermediate, like sole operator to small group, like I'm a pro, but I'm not a head.
Shout out to I don't want to name him by name because he just took himself off the leaderboard, but you probably know what I'm referring to. There's a guy with over $1 million in profit on Kalshi leaderboard in college, market making, booking RFQs.
Yeah. Like, he was only public to get an internship for the summer.
Right.
And like, once he got his internship, he pulled his name down.
Absolute legend. Like I've always had issue with them, you know, by them.
And that's the dream, right? Like that, like, but all the companies are kind of doing a bad job of saying that's the dream because that you have to kind of admit that you do have to be really good to win.
Right. And I've always had an issue with people like, you know, our friend Adi saying like Yannick Sinner is your peer. I've had an issue with that, but
that guy took a set off Yannick Sinner.
Yeah. And like good that guy, like he did a really good job. And I still stand by that. Like most people can't do it, but it's possible in the current landscape. And you have to give credit to Kalshi for allowing that. DK Predicts doesn't allow that at all. It's like a joke. It's like, unless you're like an institution with like hundreds of millions of dollars and get a CME license, like basically go fuck yourself.
And I think if that model won out, I think it would honestly be good for you and me, because I think we would spend the time and resources to get on there. So it's really not a self-interested thing. I'm like, oh, this would truly be reinventing the sports book from first principles if you had such a closed garden.
That's why I think DraftKings did it. They want to reinvent.
Maybe that, that certainly makes CME an attractive partner. But again, they've acquired Railbird. So, and that'll be interesting to see, like, what do they do with Railbird? Because, Railbird had no product, but I believe was a crypto exchange. I mean, I guess they're not beholden to any existing philosophy of how that exchange was meant to exist. We'll see. Everything is still in early days with regard to the kind of more institutional players. I also haven't, crypto.com is another kind of like quietly creeping up, and shout out Chris Fargus. He's doing a nice job.
Yeah, he is.
Kind of just building partnerships. Anyways, so that's Dustin tweet one. What is the second tweet
we got? We can put it on the screen. New record. Kalshi hit a weekly high in trading volume at 1.66 billion for the trailing 7 days. Thanks in part to Anthony Paul. It was referring to the Anthony Joshua fight, the college football playoffs, the John Wang effect, etc. Sports was 92% of volume. Top 10 markets, which shows, you know, NFL money lines at 282 million, NBA games at 250 million.
It's all sports.
It's all sports. And I think, like, he's kind of right now. That's why I think Novig is so focused on sports, because they know in the prediction market space, that's what's the biggest thing. That's what we know is the biggest thing. But I do think that there, and we'll get into it later, that there is some potential for other markets to come up that aren't sports related, that have real value.
So the first thing to point out is I love every time Dustin throws John Wang effect.
Yes, that's so funny.
John Wang's the crypto KOL that when he was added like to the Kalshi roster right at the beginning of NFL season, and volume obviously took off and people called it the John Wang effect. I mean, a handful of people said that, but he's continued to mock it. Anthony Paul fight, by the way, what an event.
Hey, I predicted $1 million on that one. It was fun.
Yeah, that was exciting. And then FanDuel of all places got down to got as high as +1,000, -1,000.
And that was insane. I've never seen that.
I was thinking about it and I was like, oh, they're just literally not writing any Anthony Joshua action. They could put any price on it.
I mean, the crazy thing to me is like, I was talking about it, who wants to bet on Jake Paul? Like, he's kind of like an arrogant YouTuber. He kind of sucks. It's like when McGregor Mayweather happened, you're like, McGregor is like actually cool and like a fan favorite.
Yeah.
But Jake
Paul. And a little more towards his peak.
Yeah. Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Jake Paul is just like an annoying prick. And like, who's betting on him or trading on him rather? And then you look at like the Kalshi like thing and you see the flow. It's straight Jake Paul money. No Anthony Joshua money in sight. It was truly like a once in a couple year like event where it's like, let's take all the recreational money and just give it to the retail the institutional money. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's hard to explain. I guess it's more that people thought it was possibly rigged than that they actually liked Paul. Although, you know, the over rounds makes more sense in that framework probably, which our guys were.
I know. Louis was all in the over. I actually disagreed with that one.
You didn't like that one? Well, no. It steamed in cash, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so yeah. I'll give him his flowers.
Shout out Louis. He did Risk Takers over the break. That was. Yeah. Did you listen to that?
It was a great episode.
I came home the other day and my wife was listening to Louis on Risk Takers.
Wow.
What do you think of that?
Is she still your wife?
She's still my wife. Right, yeah.
Good. But yeah. He's just a great guy, and it was great to see him actually like do well in like a pretty big podcast in the space.
Yeah, that's cool. That's what everybody kept texting me after. They were like, "Oh, this guy is unbelievable." I was like, "Yeah, he's one of one for sure." Yeah. Not many like him.
I like Louis a lot because he's so honest. Like if you ask him something directly, mm-hmm. he'll just be straight up.
With you. 3 weeks later, he'll be straight up with you. So everybody, check out our friend Louis on Risk Takers.
And Risk Takers in general is a great podcast. Like, we hope to get GP on here one day. I'll be honest with you, I don't like listening to the GP and SP solo. I like when the guests, I listen to it occasionally, but when they have a lot of good guests, and I really like them a lot.
Yeah. I'll sometimes meet up with Rufus in the city and just walk around and talk about stuff. And he's doing the pod.
Yep,
I think he did it yesterday, so it'll be out later this week. And he has also accumulated a lot of respect for those guys and is doing a lot of interesting stuff. Is he public with his username? I think he is, right?
Yeah. It's
dog name on leaderboards.
Currently number one on
is he number one public.
Public.
Yeah. His team is doing some kind of interesting stuff. But he hasn't, let's see what he talks about before I go disclosing some of his strategies. It's interesting. Like, you could kind of guess, but he's like, when I talk to him about market making, it's almost like he's applying this kind of logic of modeling football or modeling golf to modeling approaches to market making rather than like, you know, these deterministic, like we deal with X and Y manner kind of things. All right. Next Dustin tweet.
The Polymarket deal to do real estate markets is a tremendous use case of prediction markets. Actual hedging can occur. Sure, some people will just speculate and gambling, but it's the kind of poster child of where all this should head.
This was today.
Yeah.
And what, do you know what he's talking about? The real estate markets?
I think it's where it, I was trying to look into it. I believe it's just that you can predict on like mortgage rates in the future or like what housing prices will be in the future.
Yeah. Housing prices.
Which actually is like pretty useful. Like I would have loved, I just bought a house recently and I would have loved to know, is it projected to go up or down in 4 years? Because that would have changed my behavior.
It certainly looks more like a real financial instrument. And is the sort of thing where you could buy something that is negative EV, but like helps manage exposure on a positive EV asset and thus can be part of an overall positive EV portfolio, which is the kind of thing that you need to create super high volume, because there is a cap on how much money people will pile into things that are net losers long-term, right?
Yeah.
But it's functionally, it could functionally be insurance, right?
No, it is funny because I think that like if there was actually liquidity, I would have traded a few thousand on it to like hedge my house value.
Now the other, because your house is worth like a couple thousand bucks. You got a cardboard box in the West Village.
No, I
know what you mean.
You could trade it. I assume my idea of it would be like you could trade if like this area will go up or down 10%. So you're not hedging the entire house. You're hedging like the small percentage increase or decrease of the house.
Yes. Yeah. But it is now the other kind of hit tweet going around today around these new poly markets on housing prices is the SpongeBob and Patrick LeBron dunk saying another new market with no liquidity, which I presume there's not a lot of depth to these books. Now, that's like so much of this business is building it and hoping the next customer and the next user shows up and contributes their part of a little more liquidity, a little more tightness, a little more flow. Like honestly, you mentioned mortgage rates. These are, you know, and any kind of like fixed income long-term products that there's trillions of dollars in notional out there. The markets are actually very efficient. Like I'm describing TradFi fixed income stuff. So housing is very similar to that. Like the potential to price this very accurately at size is totally real. But just because that is true does not mean you're actually going to see enormous size day one. I mean, all this stuff has to be collateralized, right? So who's going to load up tens of millions for brand new market types? And you just always have, like, there's no point in putting up size if the counterparty doesn't exist. You're just vulnerable to adverse selection and software failure and whatnot. So like all these things work against you, but like as a user and onlooker, you have to have a little bit of patience around all this.
Well, this whole thing, it makes it reminds me of like a of like some back and forth I've seen online where it's like after the, you know, the hit piece on the Somalian daycares came out, there was a great market where it was like, what are the odds? I think Tim Walz gets arrested or like has some criminal charges for it. And it had some percentage. And someone tweeted out, I hate when people use like betting odds to, as like probability. And then all the comments were like, you can trade the other side because like if it's actually wrong, go collect the free money. And then, you know, the counter to that is, well, that 60% number or 70% number was off of like 10,000 liquidity, which is a nothing burger when like someone can move a market that much. So it's like, yes, it's really nice that people are using probability in like these prediction markets. I think that's a great use case for them. But then it's frustrating when like they're using them for like illiquid markets to make conclusions where it's like,
there's no conclusion to be drawn beyond the literal state of an order book.
You know right. what I mean? Yeah,
like
yes.
It's literally there's this much here and this much here at this price and this price. And any kind of story about like what that means about the probability or the, or how accurate the number is, like it's anybody's kind of methodology and art to transform that order book into some kind of
it's
predictive
like,
meaning.
I know like, thinking back to last election, people were like, oh, like the Trump odds don't make any sense. There was like millions of dollars traded, you know, billions in some cases. Like that's a lot of like people would be punting a lot of money if they really don't believe that.
Well, the other thing that we've seen happen a lot too, right, that I think you see in PMs because of the relative illiquidity, but also because of the kind of the larger ecosystem they exist in, is a lot of times order books and trade feeds tell very different stories, right? Like if you have some market on, you know, an NBA player prop and somebody has information or has their own model that is good or whatever, they come in with a stance, they might like attack a market for a space and then pull out of it. And it can be for only a few minutes that you might see like, oh, this order book did not resemble the broader market as a whole. But then it very quickly kind of goes back to this static state. And it's only if you're looking at like trade feeds that you would see anything, right? So if you're like, okay, right now this is kind of trading at 51.51, but there's this flurry of activity around 55, 20 minutes ago. Like which of those things actually is more signal? And it doesn't necessarily mean like this is the truth or whatever, but like a lot more is happening during that execution than is happening in this like static order book.
Another thing with always irks me with order books here is like some of the sports markets, you'll get like, you know, penny will have like, it'll be like -170 +150 on like a money line. And then there will be like millions on open orders on like 10 cents worse on both sides. And with fees, it's like 20 cents worse on both sides on like a Kalshi or a Poly market or even some cases like a Novig. And it's like, oh wow, someone's taking a position on the side. Like, no, they're just trying to get like a really good price in case someone like in case the market steams or something like that. Like this is nothing. This order book means nothing.
Yeah. People read too much into size sometimes on some of these things. So the other piece of this tweet that is a little interesting for those of us who really care about Dustin lore is why is this so positive? Why is he talking about how this is such a great market? Is it because it's a poly market and he really just hates Kalshi?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Dustin, what are you doing?
I think sometimes...
Explain yourself.
Sometimes his real like journalism comes out and he's like, oh, this is actually good. Like,
that's a generous reading. I agree with you that it could just be that he's, you know, he has to at some times acknowledge the positives of his competitors.
All right, now let's go to a big negative.
Okay, yeah.
I am a bro.
This is more like this is standard fare for Dustin.
This is like I can't even hate Dustin for this tweet.
No, because this is his bread and butter right here.
I'm a broken record, but Kalshi literally couldn't keep an actual candidate from trading on his own election.
And it's a screenshot of a candidate for governor of California tweeting his slip that he bought himself to win the governorship.
Kyle Langford.
Yeah. And he tags Kalshi. It almost looks like a sponsored post. So we got a candidate for governor of California tweeting a slip on himself, which, by the way, in all reality, not a big deal to take yourself.
So what I don't understand,
what are you going to do? You can't.
What I don't understand, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's legal if you're a boxer to bet on yourself to win.
Yes, boxing.
I don't understand, why would it be illegal for you to bet on yourself to win on governor? Like, I don't understand that.
Well, so in swaps, it's insider information is more important.
Fair.
So like if you, for instance, if you worked at Google, you'd be a major shareholder in Google, whatever, like you're completely exposed. You would never tank the value of Google. But if you know that you're about to crush earnings, it is illegal for you to like go buy.
Fair.
Whatever kind of contracts on it, just for like market fairness reasons.
And, yeah, I mean, and this seems like kind of weak sauce because
that's definitely not what this person was. It's also $400.
I also don't know, like, what insider information can you get if you're a candidate for?
You could have internal polling. You could.
That's not insider information.
Somebody could call to concede a race to you, but they haven't.
Okay, fair enough. Done that is fair. The internal polling is like, you can just like, if you really want to make a trade, go pay for a better polling and do polling yourself.
And by the way, in the context of this tweet and the broad kind of retweet quote screenshot chain, is Cauchy saying that this is against their terms and services as seen in Article 3, Section 2, blah, blah, blah. There's been kind of a broader, and this is true. So like this has been going on recently with the Spotify top played artist market. Yes. As soon as the day ends, certain options in those markets are spiking. And is it Gayton Douglas? Is that guy's name?
Yep.
Who might
be mispronouncing, but yeah.
Yeah, he's like a top Spotify trader. Is like, this just stinks. Somebody has this data. Somebody can see like a Spotify employee or whatever. And this market is broken and I can't trade it until they fix it. And this is definitely outside of the terms. And so this general tension of like, not wanting to acknowledge that this is going on and sort of not knowing whether or not the company line is, we take this very seriously and enforce the hell out of it, or like insider information is a feature, not a bug. Like that tension and messiness.
Insider trading is definitely a bug and not a feature. I do not understand the argument.
Well, if you're like a Robin Hanson, like, you know, futarchy, the world will be governed by prediction markets person. Like and by the way, people who like are into that kind of stuff kind of rarely actually
the thing that's so fresh, like, look, I kind of understand the point where it's like, if I don't trade prediction markets and I just look at it for probability, I actually do want insiders because want the most accurate information.
What's the point unless I'm actually getting,
Right. But the counter is in practice, it never works because if insiders are rampant, no one will be the counterparty because no one wants to just like, I don't want to just give money to insiders. That's not what I'm trying to do here. So market makers will stop making markets and then the liquidity dries up and then the exchange dies because now insiders cannot profit. Yeah. So you need to crack down on insiders. It's going to be hard to prevent it entirely, but you cannot endorse insider trading. It's awful. And I mean, we saw it with the Mandora, like, am I pronouncing that right? With the Venezuelan, it was instead of what?
Maduro.
Maduro, sorry.
There was another 30K on that. And again, like, who knows? Because there are all these open source intelligence accounts and people who are actually, you know, monitoring air traffic who could beat the news on these things. And if that's how somebody is beating a Maduro market, that's awesome. I think.
To be clear with the insider trading, I don't think, like, I saw this as a meme on like r/Wall Street Bets where it's like, if I'm in a plane, like a Boeing plane, and it's starting to crash, and I buy puts, that's not insider trading in my opinion. Like, that's just like, that's proper trading. And so a lot of these things, like,
a lot of the lines are not clearly drawn yet.
Right. But I think we know what insider trading is.
Yeah. But everybody, there's also a little bit of tension because Polymarket, they have like a soft launch American product, but they still have this offshore product that is not subject to any of this regulation. So with that product, they're allowed to be like a lot more casual about what markets they offer and who can trade them. And so I can understand not wanting to feel like you're boxed in and that Polymarket gets to run circles around you
yep.
with all this stuff. And then there's this effort to be part of every story, right? Like every news story could be a prediction market story if you can find a way to frame it that way. But if you want to inject your business into what's happening, you have to go to the main characters, right? Like Polymarket's got their sweatshirt on the guy who's reporting yep. on the Somali daycares. And it's like, that's the guy who's at the heart of the story. And so if you're constantly trying to get the people at the heart of the story to talk about the product, like you're going to make for strange bedfellows in this kind of way. And we've got good soldiers like Dustin pointing it out at every turn.
This is, you know, if Dustin watches this, good tweet.
Dustin, please watch this. Please.
I'll send it to him. This is a good tweet. And I think I like this from him. Some of the other stuff, not so much, but this I like a lot.
It's a great one. All right, next one.
Oh, this is great. You ought to take this one?
This is just a meme. But it was somebody with a Kalshi badge. By the way, he does a great job of going after people with Kalshi and Poly yes, badges.
He hates them.
Tweeting nonsense. But somebody just basically tweets out their incredibly day one strategy of if a favored team falls behind, you should take them because they'll probably come back, or at least they'll come back enough that you can sell. Like just the classic way. Like I've talked to traders at sportsbooks and stuff who, like, this is the first example they always use for why devigging doesn't work. They're like, oh, you can't just devig to a mid price. Like, for instance, if a favorite goes down early, everybody bets on the favorite. So all the vig is on the favorite. Like, that's the worst favorite, live bet you can my possibly favorite make.
Is the tweet that was in that Gawker is quote tweeting is Shipper's comment, which is just boom value. Like, just because the tweet is incoherent nonsense.
Yeah, I'm sorry to have not explained, but it's somebody, you've seen a million people do this, like, oh, if you wait till they're down, then you get them at plus money, and then if they're up, you can sell it. And how could you possibly lose if you just kind of ride the odds?
The TLDR is really easy. It's like, say hypothetically, the Steelers in last night's game scored the first touchdown, and they were underdogs, and you can now get Ravens at plus money live. You're like, oh. So I get the better team. I get the better team at plus money. Must be free. Well,
is a lot of people's strategy.
Yeah, but the game state has changed. Like, when the game started, it was 0-0. It's now 7-0, and the Ravens are losing. So, like,
so anyways, all of this is to say, Mr. Gawker quotes this with the scared LeBron meme and says SIG right now, which is very funny because SIG is one of the largest market makers.
Probably the largest, yeah.
And it's nice to see him actually acknowledge who is doing all this stuff.
Right.
He doesn't really go after any of the partnered businesses that much.
It is also funny when I do a lot of live trading, you know, personally, and it's so funny because the odds, if there's like a double digit underdog in the NBA and they're winning at halftime, the odds that I have a trade on them,
oh yeah,
is like so high, because it's so true. It's like everyone bets the favorites, so it's so much and it jacks up the price.
Once you've been doing this for a month, all of a sudden you just know all your positions. Like, you know your bot's positions. Just to put on the game, you're like, oh, I know I need this team to win or whatever.
Exactly.
Like, we've had that where like, oh, you just know this person's going to come back on this or not.
My wife was like, do you have a good day? I'm like, here's how you do it. Yeah. If the favorites lost, I did good. The favorites won, I did bad. Yeah. That simple.
And if the favorites won after being down in the first half,
very good.
Like, we don't. No.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
If they came back, it's brutal. I threw this in there because I just also, as we talk about more and more TradFi adjacent markets getting onto PMs, it's interesting to think about whether or not, like, SIG Sports is a pretty separate desk from Susquehanna, but. Who is pricing these kind of TradFi markets? Where are those numbers coming from? And how incorporated are they into like broader hedge funds and whatnot? Like, what does that leakage look like right now? The guys at those companies don't really talk about it.
Yeah, I don't think they want to.
But especially, yeah, whatever.
All right. Oh, this is you. This is another one you want to put in. Casual bettors, when they realize there are going to be no voids at prediction markets. You have to take this and explain.
Well, yeah, it's this guy. There are so many expectations we've built around sports trading, and in particular voids and refunds when they're appropriate, that the nature of the contracts just don't allow for. So especially the way that most of the PMs have structured so far is that all of these contracts are fungible and can be bought and sold, right? So if you buy a player to score a touchdown and then sell the contract later at a profit, the idea that then that market would void if that player doesn't play, and so your cash out gets clawed back, just doesn't work from the way the platform
is designed. I think for this, why don't we do a real example? Because anyone watching, this was explained to me and how I understood. Say I buy the Steelers.
Actually, you know what? Anthony Joshua is a great one.
Okay.
Yeah, because so this idea that, you know, if you unloaded into Anthony Joshua and you were paying 90 cents for him or something, some very high price because he's a big favorite, that fight had a real chance of getting canceled. And that price that he was trading at swings around. The way every prediction market is structured thus far, if that fight had gotten canceled, they would have had to settle that contract to one price. So if you entered at 92 cents and they decided to settle at 88 cents, then even though the fight didn't happen, you would lose a bunch of money.
They were going
to
settle at 50 cents.
And that's, I think Polymarket settles a lot of voids at 50. Kalshi is at last traded, right?
For the Joshua fight, it was specifically 50 cents.
Oh, really?
So some of the markets are last traded. I think tennis is last traded, but
interesting.
But this is here.
Yeah, so that was like a very, and I think a lot of people were arbitraging prediction markets against sports books.
Not realizing
like they had this huge opportunity to get it annihilated.
And a draw is 50%.
Yeah.
As well. And so I want to explain this concept real quick, because I think it's good to understand why there can be no voids, or why there can't be voids rather. So in the Joshua fight, say I trade Jake Paul with Henry. I spend 10 cents. Henry spends 90 cents. Then later, Henry trades, I sell my position for 15 cents to, let's just say, John Appleseed. So I now have profited 5 cents. I get 5 cents. Henry and his 90 cents are effectively trading against someone with 15 cents. If we were to void, and I take my 5 cents that I've profited and I withdraw it from the sport, from the exchange or whatever. Now, if that trade is canceled and the event is canceled and it voids, who gets that 5 cents? The exchange has to eat the loss. So if you give Henry back his full 90 cents and the other John Appleseed back his full 15 cents, the exchange is out that 5 cents. And what this allows is if you had, for example, inside information that an event was going to get canceled or something like that, you could wash trade against yourself.
Yeah. Anything that leaks a little bit can leak a lot.
Can crush them for tens of millions easily. So it kind of sucks that it's like that. And trust me, there's been some spots where I forget what game it was. I think it was the Packers this year that tied. And I had traded them as a favorite, and they settled at 50 cents. And it sucks to lose because you usually don't. But you have to understand why it is.
Now, the alternative is to restrict all funds until markets have settled.
Right.
And so it's like everybody's held in place until we actually know how this thing resolves, which for a fight that's happening this weekend seems like really sensible. Why don't you just do that? But you understand this infrastructure is built for any market type. And some of these things are like people who are...
Presidential elections,
right? Especially if you're a market maker, you cannot just have fully collateralized positions accumulating for 4 years on these things. You have to have some way to like sell in and out of a contract and not have millions and millions of dollars loaded up in collateral. So these are the kind of trade-offs that are really tough from a product perspective. And Dustin knows how to lean into him. All right. Do we have any more Dustin tweets?
No, that's it.
That's it. All right. Dustin, thank you so much for providing our New Year content. Really happy to be back.
Yeah. Yeah. And why don't we talk a little bit about what the future of predictive programming is going to be. We're going to try to get some more guests on. I think we're going to do a little bit more of just you and me talking sometimes.
We do a little more remote too. We've avoided doing remote thus far.
But I think there's a lot of good guests. You know, you're saying, I'm going to reach out to Gaten after this, actually. I want some better guests, and not everyone lives in New York. There are some good guys that don't live in New York.
My producer's saying we got Dustin locked up. He's coming on soon.
Nice.
That's settled. So we got that covered. Yeah, it'll be good. New year, new us. Cheers.